Let's continue our look at the Proverbs of Solomon by opening to Proverbs chapter 18. Verse number 15 is where we're going to start. I hope you've got your little notepad where you can jot down the references of any of these proverbs that strike your heart as something that you need to memorize, or maybe something that you'd want to share with someone else to help them to come to this wisdom of God, so that we will do things His way, make choices His way, act His way, rather than the foolishness of this world that rejects Him. So Proverbs 18:15 says, "An intelligent heart acquires knowledge, and the ear of the wise seeks knowledge." So if you want to be a good person, if you want to make good choices with your heart, then you've got to seek God's knowledge. You've got to seek God's wisdom. It doesn't just happen accidentally. James, the half-brother Jesus, when he wrote his little book, he talked about any of you that lacks knowledge, let him ask of God. So you've got to seek wisdom from God. Verse number 16. "A man's gift makes room for him and brings him before the great." Now, I think we need to make a distinction between this idea of giving a gift in order to come into a better situation, such as the old way of tipping. It used to be when you went into a restaurant, you tipped the maitre d' or to get a better table, or you tipped your waiter to make sure that you got good service all night long. Now we hold that tip hostage until the last minute to either reward the person for their good service or punish them for bad service. But the original idea was you gave it ahead of time to kind of prime the pump of a good transaction. So that's what this is talking about. A man's gift makes room for him, brings him before the great people. Bribery in the court of law to change justice is totally inappropriate. And so the Proverbs actually talks about both. It seems to be perfectly fine with this, but condemns the attempt to change justice by means of bribery. All right, verse number 17. "The one who states his case first seems right until the other comes and examines him." And this is, again, kind of an observation that you need to hear all sides before coming to the conclusion. Because like in a court of law, when the case is being presented by the defense, you might be hearing all that and going, "Wow, it doesn't sound like this guy did it at all." And then the prosecution presents their case and you're like, "Oh, well, that now kind of just totally does away with some of the stuff we heard earlier." And then vice versa. Maybe the rebuttal witnesses come up and you change your mind again. But the idea is listen to everything first, because there's always, as we say, two sides to a story. Verse number 18, "The lot puts an end to quarrels and decides between powerful contenders." Now, this is the reference to the divine lot that we were talking about earlier this week, which is cast into the lap, but it's every decision belongs to the Lord. It's not just randomly flipping a coin and letting that decide the case. It's the idea that you come to a clear point where two choices are equally valid, but you can't decide which one to go with. And so you decide to just hand it over to the Lord and let Him decide. Verse number 19, "A brother offended is more unyielding than a strong city, and quarreling is like the bars of a castle." And all of us, I think, have experienced this. When you get into a big fight with someone, and that fight needs to come to an end, an argument, that is a tough phase in the relationship. And it takes a lot of effort and a lot of commitment to get that conclusion to the matter taken care of. But we really need to do it because it's important. Verse number 20. From the fruit of man's mouth, his stomach is satisfied. He is satisfied by the yield of his lips. So what you say impacts upon your life. And so you need to use your words carefully and properly. That's what the proverb is advising. Verse 21. Death and life are in the power of the tongue, and those who love it will eat its fruits. This was particularly true when you're talking about kings and judges. They make decisions that will result in life and death. And so they need to be thoughtful in how they proceed with that. And they need to do it in a God fashion so that the produce, the fruit of what they say will be acceptable. Verse 22. He who finds a wife finds a good thing and obtains favor from he who is. So we've talked about gender-specific proverbs in here being able to be flipped. And so this is one of those. Whether you're finding a wife or a husband, if you find a good, godly spouse, that's a good thing. And that's who you should be looking for if you're not yet married. And that's who you should be thankful for if you already are married to a godly spouse, because that's going to help make your life easier. Now, in the New Testament, we are told that, you know, if that's not the way it turned out, if you're not married to a good Christian spouse, then you need to be living the Christian life in front of them so that you can set an example that might change that, so that they will become a follower of the same Lord that you have right now. Verse 23, the poor use entreaties, but the rich answer roughly. This is an observation psalm that if you are not very powerful, if you're not very influential, you have to argue your case carefully. You've got to have all your ducks in a row, your P's, and your Q's discerned. You've got to have your T's crossed and your I's dotted, because you have to make the argument work for you. Whereas a rich person, they figure they can influence things with their wealth, so they don't have to be careful with their words. They just say, hey, I'm a rich guy, make it happen. And that's not necessarily a good thing, okay? It's just an observation. Verse number 24. A man of many companions may come to ruin, but there is a friend who sticks closer than a brother. So some people have lots and lots and lots of hangers-on, maybe because they're prominent in society, like maybe they're famous, or maybe they have wealth. And so they have lots of, quote, friends, end quote, that hang around. But none of those friends are going to help them out if they come into trouble, because they're there just because of who they are. But this proverb says, you know what? There are the type of friends that you should be looking for, that they stick by you no matter what's happening. They are there like family, because that relationship is real. And that's the sort of friends you need to cultivate. Chapter 19, verse 1. Better is a poor person who walks in his integrity than one who is crooked in speech and is a fool. That is definitely true, isn't it? Poverty really shouldn't be the determining factor on how a person's character actually is. If they speak the truth in love, if they speak and live the wisdom of God, then they are good people. And if they happen to be people that don't believe in God, don't do things God's way, and they are not trustworthy, doesn't even matter if they're rich and famous. They are not good people. They are problematic people that are in need of repentance. Verse number 2. Desire without knowledge is not good, and whoever makes haste with his feet misses his way. So I think this has got that sense of the get-rich-quick scheme again. That when you're just doing stuff to get ahead, doing stuff because you want to do the stuff, that's not a good enough reason. That's going to take you off the path of God real fast. You've got to be thoughtful in your approach to life. Verse number 3. When a man's folly brings his way to ruin, his heart rages against he who is. Now, this is definitely an observation psalm. It's not a good situation. People will do stupid things because they are foolish. They are morally bankrupt. And then they get themselves in trouble. And too often, what do? They blame others. And the thing that this proverb points out, which I find very frustrating, is they often blame God. I can't tell you how many times I've seen people in the church even, that they are engaging in unwise actions, and they're even warned about it. And then bad things happen because of that, just naturally, and they come crying saying, God is not taking care of me. God, why did God let this happen? And it's not God, it's them that's got the problem. And so this proverb kind of speaks about that. Verse 4. Wealth brings many new friends, but a poor person, a poor man, is deserted by his friend. Again, observation that all of us are familiar with. You know, you might get some windfall of cash, and suddenly all these relatives you didn't even know had, all these friends that you haven't heard of for quite some time, they just come out of the woodwork. And so that's what this proverb mentions. And unfortunately, if you lose stuff, you lose your money, you lose your house, that's sometimes when you find out who your real friends are, because the fair-weather friends abandon you in times of crisis like that. Verse number 5. A false witness will not go unpunished, and he who breathes out lies will not escape. Lying is very much a sinful thing, and bearing false witness in a court of law, very bad. And it needs to be dealt with in order to stop it from happening again. See, we punish those things which we want to stop. And so false witnessing, lying, needs to have some sort of penalty attached to it. Now, in Jewish law, if you bore false witness in a court case and you were discovered in your perjury, whatever the penalty that was to be assessed to the person being prosecuted, that would be assessed to you. So if you were like in a property case and you lied in order to try to get somebody's property taken away from them, when you got discovered in your perjury, you had your property taken away. If you were in a capital case trying to get somebody executed by your lies and you got found out, you were executed. So that's the serious type of penalties against lying. Verse number 6. Many seek the favor of a generous man, and everyone is a friend to a man who gives gifts. And again, observation, isn't that true? When people start handing out presents, that's somebody you kind of gravitate toward. Verse number 7. All a poor man's brothers hate him. How much more do his friends go far from him? He pursues them with words, but does not have them. Again, we're still on this same topic, that people will often abandon a person. What little shallow relationship they have with that person just kind of dissipates if that person suddenly turns out to be poor. And this is, of course, not appropriate behavior. Our relationships should not be based on stuff. Verse 8. Whoever gets sense loves his soul. He who keeps understanding will discover good. We're supposed to be in this pursuit of wisdom. And if we love ourselves, if we really are already on the path of wisdom, then we're going to do what it takes to find those good things, that good wisdom. Verse 9, a false witness will not go unpunished, and he who breathes out lies will perish. Just a slightly different wording of what we talked about earlier. It is not fitting for a fool to live in luxury, much less for a slave to rule over princes. So it's a bad thing for foolish people to get away with stuff and to have great prosperity because they're not living an appropriate life. And same thing with a slave. Slaves very often came into their slavery because of bad financial decisions. And so for a slave to suddenly rule over princes was not a good situation. Verse number 11. Good sense makes one slow to anger, and it is his glory to overlook an offense. Book of James. James says we're supposed to be slow to speak and quick to hear and slow to become angry. So we're supposed to keep control of our reaction to other people and be moderated in how we respond. Think about it before we act. That's what these types of proverbs are encouraging. Verse 12, a king's wrath is like the growling of a lion, but his favor is like the dew on the grass. So when you come before the king for a decision, you don't want him frowning and growling at you because that's not boding well. You'd rather he smile and nod and be compassionate because that's like that fresh dew every morning that makes you happy to see it there because it's life to the world. Verse 13. A foolish man is a ruin to his father, and a wife's quarreling is a continual dripping of rain. So if you're a dad and your child is acting foolish, it just frustrates you. It just breaks your heart. And if you're in a marriage where your spouse is constantly griping at you, it's like living in a room that's got this drip that's happening, and you can't quite figure out where it's at, but it's really annoying. And so that's not a good situation. And of course, this proverb is encouraging the idea of help your son be wise, not foolish, and help your wife or your husband, if you want to flip the gender on this, to fix whatever's leading to these quarrels, because you want the relationship to prosper, not be annoying. Verse number 14. House and wealth are inherited from fathers, but a prudent wife is from he who is. So the typical way that you ended up with property was from your parents. But what you really wanted in your life was a spouse that came from God, because that would make your life so much better. And so I hope, like myself, you appreciate your spouse and consider them a gift from God. And treat them appropriately. You know, sometimes we forget to do that. And be thankful to them for all the stuff that they do out of their love for you. Verse number 15. Slothfulness casts into a deep sleep, and an idle person will suffer hunger. So this is one of our laziness proverbs. The more lazy you are, the more lazy you become. It just kind of is a self-replicating process. But there is a remedy here that is natural to it. And that is, if they won't work, they're going to get hungry. And maybe that is going to push them to quit being lazy. And it's one of the reasons why Paul quotes the proverb talking to the Thessalonians, if a person won't work, neither shall he eat. So that's one of the things that we should keep in mind when dealing with people that can physically work but just won't do it. They need to suffer some sort of hunger to drive them back into the workplace. Verse number 16. Whoever keeps the commandment keeps his life. He who despises his ways will die. Now, his ways would be God's ways here because it's parallel to the commandment. So long life was one of the blessings that happened in Israeli society when the commandment was being kept. And execution and disease and invasion by foreign forces, which would cut your life short, those were the penalties that came for not living according to the covenant. Verse 17, whoever is generous to the poor lends to he who is, and he will repay him for his deed. Now, this is a good way to think about it. When you see a poor person, a person who through no fault of their own, they've fallen on hard times, and they need some assistance to get past that time period. When you help them out, you're basically lending into God's kingdom, into God's work. And it's not the poor person that's going to pay you back, it's God. He'll make sure that you're taken care of. And that's the way we should look at it. Verse 18, discipline your son, for there is hope. Do not set your heart on putting him to death. Now, discipline of minor children is to train them to do the right things after they come out underneath your discipline, when they are no longer under your control, because you don't want them to get in trouble with a later authority, including perhaps even come under a death penalty for doing something wrong. So we think now as we're raising our kids, I need to put the pressure on my kid now to do the right thing so that they don't get in trouble with the government later. Verse number 19. A man of great wrath will pay the penalty, for if you deliver him, you will only have to do it again. Okay, this is, again, another observation that sometimes people have to bear the penalty for their sins or crimes in order to learn their lesson. I know that many people feel that they should immediately go and bail a person out of jail who has gotten there because of their sinful criminal behavior. But the honest truth is they may need that negative experience to make them realize just how bad a choice this was. And so it's that tough love idea that sometimes we have to stand back and let people suffer under the penalty of their own choices so that they will learn the lesson. I know it's hard to do that, but the proverb says that if you keep letting an angry person get away with it, they're only going to repeat that behavior. Okay, verse number 20. Listen to advice and accept instruction that you may gain wisdom in the future. Always the advice in this book. Pay attention to what people are trying to teach you. Learn the easy way rather than the hard way, so that you can be wise when you face choices in the future. Verse 21, many are the plans in the mind of a man, but it is the purpose of he who is that will stand. So all of us, we have things we want to do, would like to do, plan to do, but we really need to run that through God's filter of wisdom, because only the things that God approves of are going to last for eternity. Verse 22, what is desired in a man is steadfast love, and a poor man is better than a liar. Now, the steadfast love here is chesed. This is the idea of having a positive emotional attachment. And so that's what's desired, is somebody has a commitment type of love toward other people. And a poor man that is committed to that sort of love is still better than a liar that might happen to be rich, that has no such commitment. So it's this contrasting between people of prominence with power but no morals, bad. People with less power, but they are grounded in the morality of God, that's good. Verse number 23, the fear of he who is leads to life, and whoever has it rests satisfied. He will not be visited by harm. So if we live by God's standard, our life is going to be more satisfying, and we are going to avoid more of the troubles of this world, and certainly we will avoid God's judgment. We finish with one of the lazy proverbs. Verse 24, the sluggard buries his hand into the dish, and he will not even bring it to his mouth. I remember being a teenager, and my preacher, Larry Atkins, was teaching us the proverbs. And this is one of the ones that he acted out in front of us. You know, the lazy person puts his hand down into his plate. He can't even get it back to his mouth. He's just that lazy. Don't be that lazy. Get out there, work. Work to pay your bills, but also work so that you'll have something that you can help other people out with as well.